Welcome back to Movie Trailer Reviews Podcast. It's your host, Chris, here with Ro and special guest, Brandon. We're never going to get rid of that special guest.
I'm special, so I'll take it.
Yeah, we can do that. We're here to review, discuss episodes 5, 6, and 7 of Lovecraft Country. We are back for this. I like to call these three Atticus Ain't Worth Shit. Because your boy ain't worth shit.
I mean, we can just put Atticus to the side for these. He's not really, you know, important.
He's really not. I also think that this is something we've said when we watched the first four, is that this show has done a really good job of really centering all the women around him and showing that really the show's about them and not really about, like, he's there because you kind of, you know, bloodlines and shit. Yeah, whatever, nigga. We need that shit. That's really what it is. And but everybody else is actually getting the heat of the story here going forward. So, yeah, what do you guys think?
Well, I mean, how are you going to build a generational story if you don't actually talk about that pesty, the family?
The pesty penis, you know, what can I say?
Wow. See, I wasn't going to say that.
I'm allowed because I have one, so it's okay.
Okay, I mean, if you just want to lead off the bat,
I mean,
with the bat.
I mean, we left off the bat with him saying he ain't worth shit. I mean, especially after episode 6, I'm like, yo, this nigga's unredeemable, yo.
Okay, but wait, we can't skip episode 5, especially after the way me and B acted a damn fool.
You know what the funny thing about it is? So, yeah, I want to talk about that. Y'all niggas ain't slick. Like, this is what I thought y'all were talking about and knew, and I was like, yeah, like, it's, I don't know. The whole thing with Christine, first of all, didn't catch me off guard. Because I started seeing other people talking about it before, and I was like, wait, did people not put those together? And I didn't want to say anything last episode, because I know you guys had seen it, and you guys were doing a really fucking horrible job of not trying to, like, really, really struggling to not talk about episode 5 when nobody else has seen it. So I was like, let me not even try to go down this road with you guys, because you guys are not going to be able to handle that. But I was like, yeah.
Okay. I didn't think any of it was a surprise. If you've been paying attention from the beginning, you're on to the fact that Christine is deep in the paint when it comes to magic. And that, like, when he opened the door for him not to have been family, he had too much information. And then there was just a seamlessness between the two of those two people, so to speak. And how they acted and what their motives were, and, you know, the whole not seeing one in the room when you saw the other.
I mean, that was the biggest
It was
one.
The way they did it that I loved so much.
I think the way they did it was fine, but I don't know. I just pick up on these things really well at this point. You know,
we watch a lot of horror movies.
Right. We watch a lot of horror. So, like, anytime I don't see two people who are pivotal to the story in the same room at the same time together, I immediately go, oh, them niggas the same.
Y'all are cute. That's not what I was talking about last episode.
I was about to ask you what you was talking about. I assumed that wasn't it. So share, sir, share.
No, let me say, it wasn't the only thing, but go ahead.
I was talking about that Death by Heels scene at the end. That's what I was talking about. Y'all ain't ready for my girl to get like 7 good heel shoves up this man's ass at the end of that episode.
But I really was. I really was.
That poor racist white man, piece of trash shit.
Poor my foot. He got literally exactly what he deserved.
And is not going to sit until black people get equality. That man's ass.
Not even then. That man is going to need a colostomy bag, among other things. And I'm okay with all of this.
That's what I was talking about. I wasn't talking about the whole her skin falls off and it's a white person or it's a black person and she using magic to hide her identity and all that shit. I was not talking about that. Like, I was going to leave that to y'all niggas. I was talking about the graphicness of taking your black anger out on these white people that we are constantly experiencing now on this show. That's what I was talking about. That's what I'd be looking forward to.
I mean, look, that's part and parcel, a big, huge part of what is Lovecraft, you know, horror. And, like, I like the fact that they're being directly in your face with it, and they have it completely tied into the society and the world. I do tend to have a problem sometimes when people want to get mad about them keeping things period correct. But everything that they did with Ruby in that episode was brilliant. The way that they kind of, I love the modern touches of which songs they picked for her. I loved the way that as a dark-skinned black woman who's been in many a place and walked in somewhere and seen a skinny bitch in a job that I should have, and you talk to that girl and she hasn't got even a third of the qualifications of what you've done to be ready to walk in that door and be ready, all of the attitude, all of the bitterness, and then having her ask those questions in the body of a white woman. Mm-hmm. So then you get to see the wrongness of the attitude when it's right. coming to you from a woman, but it's coming to you from a woman not of the same ethnicity of you as you. I thought all that was brilliantly done. I mean, Strange Case is still one of my favorites and probably will stay my favorite. And I don't care. And I'm perfectly, these last three episodes I thought were really well done. Like Ruby's episode really built out what's going on with Chicago, where are the areas where Jim Crow is giving way and you know, equitableness is showing up, but what does it look like? So the layers of discrimination, the layers of misogyny noir, the attitude, the fact this big woman, I'm sorry, y'all, could walk down the street, go in somewhere to try to buy some ice cream and not even have to pay. All she had to use was the currency of her skin. I thought that was one amazing allegory that held together for the entire episode. And she was nicer than me. All he got was a stiletto in the booty. I'm just saying.
Well, yeah, I was expecting her to actually get all of them, even though the woman she was working with. So I actually thought they got off kind of light
yeah.
for this episode.
Oh, yeah.
The way they handled that.
Let's be real. I'd have wreaked all kinds of havoc. Let me be a white woman for a day.
Right.
A week? Man, come on.
Right. Right. Yeah.
But I thought it was brilliant. And it gave you another way into the bigger mystery. You know, it's a whole different way into seeing what's going on in this town. Especially, you know, when Ruby ends up in the closet. Come on.
Right.
Man. Is that a white dude on a black dude's body?
I think it is.
It is, because that's supposed to be like a callback to the doctor doing the experimentations and why that he might have been like, this is a product of this, is like the first thing a nigga wanted was to a full white head.
It's either a white dude on a black dude's body or a black person wearing a white man's skin.
I think it's a black dude with a white dude's head, and that even like is that's even more disturbing. Ingrained self-hate. Yeah, like that's just that is who oh my god, I can't even think of who is the guy that they're trying to I don't even know. It's a black dude's name is floating around right now as being a fucking sellout in politics. Like this is how much I care
which
about
which one? Which one? Are you talking about Cameron? Darren Cameron? Which one? There's so many.
Sure.
No, you talking about Bizarro Wayne Brady?
No, it's not Wayne Brady. He actually fighting niggas now. Like he's threatening.
No,
like,
Bizarro Wayne Brady. That's what David.
Yes,
Cameron
Bizarro Wayne Brady.
He looks like Wayne Brady with a bad shape up because he boot looking for not, yeah.
Yep.
Bizarro but this Brady. But this whole episode is just a unique way to utilize body horror. It's subtle, but very effective, and like blood magic and all these different elements that come in. But I have a soft spot in my heart for all of the ladies in this show. So I don't necessarily hate Christine. I don't like her because she's evil and she's grimy and she's a user, but I also don't hate her. So Ruby the ability to go where she won't, do what she wanted, it was kind of okay with me.
Well, yeah, I mean, knowing that she has an ulterior motive, but like also because you know that she's been having to do the same thing, right? That, you know, while she is a white woman that definitely comes with a certain level of privilege that we saw in this episode, she also comes with some things she's not allowed to do because she is a woman, even though she clearly is, you know, more adept in magic than her father and anybody else that he was working with knows, right? It's like she still wasn't allowed a seat at the table because, well, she has a vagina.
I mean, you know, vaginas are scary, apparently.
Yeah. So, You know what the other thing too that really worked out really well with episode five. And this was one of the things that they're working here, and I do feel like I was watching episode five. Episode five was a lot, not just because of like obviously the over the top stuff, but you also the stuff with Montrose and what they're doing there. And I think that's another piece of kind of fitting in with the what this show does really well when they talk about some of the fantastical stuff and obviously the sci-fi stuff. They always blend it with something that is very real. And the fact here is that Montrose himself is not comfortable in his own skin.
And with he's gay.
Well, I mean, yeah, but it comes down to him not being comfortable with himself being gay, and the fact that he has literally, for as long as we can tell, has been living, you know, this lie, not just to the people around him, but to himself.
Well, see, I don't know if the phrase living a lie is accurate.
I mean more.
But I get what you mean.
Right. I mean, so when I say a lie, I mean, when I say lie, I'm not talking about like to everybody. I'm talking about to himself. Like it seems like there's, especially in, I think it's five. Yes, five. Where you can tell that he has pent all the stuff up inside and has, and like he will not let himself like be who he is. You know, and obviously there's you know, the fact of telling his family and things like that, and Atticus being himself, which we'll get into seven, but like not saying Atticus is right, but we also kind of get where Atticus is coming from. It's like, you beat the fuck out of your son, calling him soft, while, you know, and was that more about you, how you feel about yourself than about him? Like it's like this really internalized hate he has for himself that he's been holding up inside, and you get that a little bit. You get that in episode five.
And I'd like to make a correction, just for clarity purposes. He wasn't beating his son. He was beating another man's son. That's
okay. We don't know that. Okay. We still do not
know
that.
You know what? Valid. I'm gonna stop with Brandon on this and say, fine. Valid point.
Valid point. He was beating the child in his care.
he's beating the fuck out of the son that he was the kid that he was a guardian of. Like, we can go with
fine,
that. Right?
Fine. He was beating his ward. I mean, we can be Dickens about it. Great. Whatever. I hate you, Brandon. I mean, so much. Yeah, I hate you so much. Just, I
mean, at this point.
Okay, let's just get this accurate. Okay.
But like, but I think that's the point. Like you were saying, it's like, it's not that they don't focus on this idea of, I mean, other than even with when they kind of have Atticus react, right? They don't focus on this idea, like, and we talked about this recently when we talked about the Billy Tipton, Roe and I talked about the Billy Tipton, Dr. Mary, No Ordinary Man. They're not focusing on this idea of, well, you lied to the people around you, you lied to this. It's like, no, you are literally, and for right reasons with the age period, you are definitely afraid of being yourself. You will not give yourself, like, you are, and, you know, at one point, who is his boyfriend? What is the guy's name? Is it Sammy? Yeah, when he shows up at Sammy's house and Sammy basically asks him, "Who the fuck beat you up this time?" You know, what was it this time? You know, and apparently knowing that there have been when Atticus brings up that there have been rumors about him this entire time, right? And you can see that you know, who knows how long him and Sammy have been together, but not really together. Like when somebody else says at some point, it's like, you guys haven't even kissed.
That was Shangela.
Right. It's like when you're like, you guys haven't even locked lips. Right. And it's just like, he only comes over to Sammy when he knows that nobody else can see him. And he has all this hatred for himself in this. And it's just, it was actually kind of sad. Like, again, all the men are actually pieces of shit on the show. Really? Because Montrose is not a good guy, right?
He's a whole ass murderer, and he's willing to sacrifice other people to hold his secrets. I know people lost their mind and got very upset about the end of episode four. And I think a lot of the complaints were valid. They could have handled things, or they could have given better explanations in ways. But I also think that we really want a modern lens to fix everything for us on TV. We want all the errors to be corrected when we show stuff. And the reality of the situation is, a man like Montrose looking at a woman knowing that this woman has information that if given to his son or ward,
I was saying not son,
will unravel all of his past and all of his secrets. As black men have done since the beginning of time, he's perfectly comfortable sacrificing that woman's life. And I know they probably should have put a trigger warning on it, because it is very reminiscent of what it looks like for black trans women to be beaten and killed at the hands of black men. Let's be real. But I also think the other conversation that we need to be having is about how real that is. And the conversation about how stifled and choked this man is, that he will do anything and everything to keep his secrets and keep control, up to and including killing somebody, to try to stop them from taking someone who he's manipulating and controlling the way he wants them to go.
Yeah. Now
out
I will,
of his control.
Now I will say that,
and outing him. Right. So I really feel like, you know, it could have been done better. It could have been. I thought it was done. I thought it opened the door for a lot of conversation. But as someone who has not had to live that experience, I can understand how that could be very dismaying and upsetting and sad, because up until this point, everybody, every different kind of black person has had a place in Lovecraft country. And this just kind of makes it feel a little bit sometimes more like that's just one group too far.
Well,
and they killed them out immediately. And, you know, we have a tendency, you know, it's a riff off Killing Your Gays. So I got that. But I really felt like it spoke a lot to Montrose's story, especially once you got into episode 5 and you saw what the arc was for his story there, and you see where it's going into episode 7. I didn't feel like it was throwing away one for the other. Now, as a woman, I was a little annoyed that it felt like they sacrificed a woman in service to a man.
But I think that's where, so there is one thing that threw me off for episode 4 or 5. It is that, because I think that the critiques are valid on that, because they literally throw her away. Like after that death at the end of 4, they literally, there's a point of, you don't even see them throw the body away. And it takes a while before Letty even realized that Atticus knows, and for Atticus to admit that, no, he didn't just get rid of the pages. He got rid of that.
He got rid of her.
Like, right. And I think that piece there of doing that off screen and doing it, almost you treated the whole thing almost throwaway, and to the point of literally it being something to help the story of a man. Like I do think that is a hugely,
I think it's a very valid complaint.
It's a very valid complaint. And I think
I didn't like it at all.
It was a
And I realized why it was and what was necessary for the plot. But I felt like we should have come right back in. They should have given us more before we got to see Montrose in the club. Right. We should have got to see Montrose wrestling with the rest of that and the fallout from that. And there should have been more with Tick and Letty. I got what Letty is naive in a way that people don't expect.
But I think that
could have also been handled better between Tick and Letty. And I agree. I think that's a very valid complaint. I just felt like some of the other complaints where people were trying to narrow the focus of how that character should be viewed, I felt like it was a very modern lens, and I felt like it closed the door on other conversations that needed to be had. It felt like they were trying to seize a narrative. And I felt like, I'm like, this is a multifaceted problem and there can be multiple complaints. And no one complaint is any more invalid or valid than the other. So
no, I hear you,
I
but I'm just
into conversations where it was not my place to speak. But as a woman watching this go, I was very disappointed to see them throw away a female presenting character and it be solely in furtherance of one setting up a cliffhanger.
Right. Right. And that's what I'm saying. It's like I really do feel like for the show that's been as smart as this, that was a glaring misstep that should have been caught. Like, I think that, you know, it doesn't sour me completely on the show. It doesn't sour me on the rest of the episodes. Because, again, I think the episode is still very, very well done. And so are the rest of the episodes. It's just one of those things of, like, Come on, guys. Yeah. That should have been authenticity.
Because that's how those stories get handled. They barely get a full news cycle if they get a news cycle at all.
Right, but that shouldn't be how that happens.
Better from our TV when our TV is handled by Black people.
Well, because the show is doing a better job of doing that with everything else, right? And so it goes back to that thing of, well, if you're doing it better, you wouldn't have done that with anything else, so you probably shouldn't have done it here. So yeah. I just want to bring that up.
I'm happy that they didn't just drop it and that they're at least carrying forward with the rest of the storyline through Montrose, and that the other aspects of queerness haven't disappeared on the show, especially when you get to I Am. So it was a hiccup. I don't think it derailed anything for me. I just thought it was a reinsertion of a actual reality in a way that people didn't expect. And I can understand the disappointment behind that. But I thought it was balanced out, again, just speaking as a Black woman, with the juxtaposition of the conversation of what was Christine's solution for Ruby's problem. I'll just make her a white woman, you know? So... I don't know. Yeah, I agree. It didn't sour me on the show, but yeah. I thought I don't like those things ending up just being cliffhangers, but Body Horror episode 5. I came in the door like about episode 5, so y'all knew that.
Right. Right. We're going to say episode 6 is one. Go ahead.
Were you gonna say no, something? I just giggled.
Oh no. Episode 6 finally gives a little bit more information on, you know, what Tick was doing in Korea, which is being a huge piece of shit. We're gonna be real here. Cause
ooh.
I mean, am I wrong?
No. Were you surprised to find out that he went, you know, I was just following orders, Black man in the military?
No. But I think that also kind of helps. The thing that is great about episode 6 is it kind of helps also inform a little bit more about where Tick is and the Tick that we see today. Because I'm just following orders Tick, I'm like, we've seen that before. And it actually kind of explains a lot of where his character goes and what he's doing here. And so I can appreciate where they come from with that. And this idea of, you know, not being defined by your parents, I think is also another thing that, you know, you get a lot of in this episode.
I don't want to end up as the receptacle for a nine-tailed fox demon. Thank you.
I don't know.
That's just a lot.
Made me want to watch Naruto.
I don't know. I've been playing a lot of Ghost of Tsushima, and so there's a whole thing where you do these things and foxes show up. So at one point, we actually see a real fox. It wasn't a real fox. We see that fox in the end of this episode. I'm like, huh? That's not the video game. Interesting. I will say this as you know, when you're a parent and you meet some witch lady in the woods and they tell you that there is a heavy price to pay for whatever you're about to ask them to do, I'm just gonna say, don't do it.
Just, I mean, let's be real. First of all, episode 6 was beautiful, and I was happy that they didn't just jump in and keep it narrow. Like, we don't really talk about the Korean War very much in this country. Like, at all.
You say not that much. You mean what war?
Yes, but I mean conflict. I'm sorry. Was it actually a declared war? Because, you know, the Vietnam wasn't. It was just a conflict. Was it actually a war? Can we use that?
I think Korean
War. Did Congress vote on Korea?
I'm going to look that up real quick because I can't remember. Because it's actually not that many wars we've been in. We have conflicts.
Right. So I can't remember. But I thought it was... I know, again... B, you are correct. It pains me. But Brandon said, I think you said before that the pace set is between the evens and the odds. And mm-hmm. I think you're right. And I thought they slowed down the pace in episode 6 again. And like you said, gave us like a background pick. But I liked, again, the fact that the story was not told from Tick's point of view. We finally got to find out who that person is on the phone who keeps trying to call him.
Just to say real quick, we never formally declared war.
Okay.
This one. Mm-hmm. But it's also not officially over. Just want to remind everybody that technically we're still in conflict.
Technically, we're still in conflict with Vietnam. What's your point?
Technically. Anyway, sorry.
But yeah, I thought that was an amazing story arc. I thought it was interesting. I thought it gives a whole glimpse of history. I like the fact that people are very unafraid to pull in points in history that we don't talk about. This is what, like the fourth one by now? Just major big ones, you know. Obviously we all remember Tulsa, but like the episode with the haunted house was about crossing color lines and redlining in neighborhoods, and now you have us talking about the Korean conflict and what was allowed to be happening in pursuit of ending communism. And it did kind of remind me a little bit of how it looked in Watchmen when we went overseas to the, you know, revitalized and reinvigorated Vietnam with American soldiers everywhere. But yeah, I felt she should have eaten Tick. I know that would mean that the story would have ended and we never would have gotten the other episodes, but I kind of feel like she should have ate Tick. Am I wrong? Is that bad?
I mean, he was over there pulling the teeth out of her best friend, so I mean, there's that.
And he shot someone and had the blowback go on her face.
Right.
While chewing gum.
Right. So there's that. Yeah. Right, you know.
Like all that, they had good chemistry.
Right.
They were just rapport with each other.
But then technically, she was also, because we don't know that all the men she killed, all 99 other men she killed, were terrible people. So. Technically, that's the only reason why I reconcile this is that they're both murderers.
Yeah. So, oh, she a whole ass murderer, right. But I felt like she picked a little better. I mean,
we don't know that.
Right. That's the thing. First, we don't know that she did that, because the first dude she killed, we don't know that he wasn't doing anything wrong as far as we knew.
He was committing adultery. He had was a whole he? Ass wife and baby.
Did we know? Wait. Did we? Oh, okay. Well, maybe they were separated. Maybe they were separated. And wait a minute. Since when is adultery a capital offense that leads to your death? Come on now.
I just want to know how you know that wasn't his future family.
Right, that's the thing too, right.
Because she said she saw their entire lives, their current lives flash. She had their lives.
Wait, so how you know she didn't see his future family?
That she took from him. Because she saw Tick's future.
Right, she saw him dying.
Fair enough.
Mm-hmm. She might have pre-killed this man before he had a wife and a kid and a family.
What you're telling me is Gia was the Korean conflict's pre-crime unit.
She might have been, you know. Sure. She might have been. I'm just saying.
Okay,
just
look, saying. I don't believe that everybody that she ate deserved it, but y'all know me. You know I don't really have a problem with her killing dudes. I don't. I'm sorry. I didn't.
Hey, look, we ain't judging you. We just saying that she a whole ass serial killer.
She's a very inefficient, messy ass serial killer.
Listen, you know, I am equal opportunity, and it's fine. You know, your dick is not your friend. I say this all the time. You know, dudes should have known better. I mean, I'm not saying they had it coming, but I mean, shit. You know, you show up. I mean, first of all, they didn't, like, she would live close to downtown. So how'd they get all the way out there to her place? You get there when she lit them fucking candles. She lit one candle, all the other ones lit. I would have been like, you know what?
You know what? I really don't think I can do this right now. It's good
you
to
know
meet
what?
You. You
know what? How'd you do? You know what? No, but you know, no, no. Also, I like to say just for the entire thing. While I didn't watch this show, I just find it so interesting. Everybody's watching this stuff now, and nobody's talking about condoms like they did with Insecure.
Well, were condoms really that big a thing back in the day? I mean, would we like to go back and check the records to see exactly how many war brides came over because they had servicemen's babies? or people who were able to get asylum after the war. I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking about
Letty being fucking pregnant and all this other shit, because they just been out here fucking and letting off and cream pieing with no fucking, like, no pull-out game or no nothing. I'm just saying, ain't nobody talking about condoms and how it's leading a bad example like they did with Insecure. I just want to point that out.
What's the year again?
Well, does it matter what year it is?
Yes, it does matter what year it is.
Does it really? Do you really want to see your modern day? So do we need to go back and look at all the other modern day shows we see that nobody's pulling out condoms? Are we really going to do this,
frequently sitting in my house watching TV and modern TV. I'm like, so we not even going to pretend like y'all need to get a condom?
Nobody wears condoms on TV. Nobody wears condoms on TV.
I have problems with it. I have problems with really it. I commented on the time, but I'm talking really, about for particularly really, for Lovecraft really have, Country back really in the day, problems? What was the prevalence and availability of condoms?
Do you really want to see?
I've been watching, I think at this point I have watched 20, no, not 20. I think I'm at like 17. I've watched 17 seasons of MTV's The Challenge, and I have yet to see anybody pull out a condom before they go into the bathroom.
That's because they're nasty.
So again, nobody nasty. Was talking about condoms when they was watching Johnny Bananas take one of those new girls, those rookies, into the bathroom. I don't
who know. Is nobody, because it's the first thing I say. I call row, all row, them
row,
nasty.
Row,
I say they
row,
all need
row,
liquid showers.
Row,
ugh.
Row,
ugh.
Row.
Yes.
You are not the normal person, so take yourself
okay,
out of
well,
this.
Well, then I'll take that as a
yes.
compliment and,
take that,
and
take
be
that,
happy
take
with
that,
it,
because
I
that.
Think it's just nasty. I think I don't understand how we ended up in a world where we went from, it's highly logical, well, for the making of a movie. First of all, what, I mean, Tip
row,
had
row, row,
Tip
row,
learned about
row.
Sex from a nine-tailed fox
row.
Demon.
Row is 2020 and people can't even put masks on. So I'm gonna just say that you're
okay,
one of the few that
people
that,
are
yes.
getting condoms, rewashing them, boiling them, and reselling them.
Yeah, that's actually the story I didn't cover on the Zantini Check this week about
in Korean about
the reuse of condoms. So yes, so Row, no, you're being, I'm gonna say it, you're being weird on this one. You got this one to go.
Being weird,
you're in the minority here. You gotta listen. We'll go.
Fine, I'm gonna let y'all have this, but just yeah,
But she really, But Tick really did learn about sex from Tails from Sonic 2. So there's that. So
oh, I'm never gonna be able to unsee that.
Come on, I can't be the only one that thought this. Like, come on.
No,
it's,
you're
this,
not.
This,
but I wasn't
this Tails,
gonna
like,
say
he,
it loud.
Yeah, basically Tick is a furry, so I'm just saying.
Be over here talk about Narsu and messing me up on that too. I'm really mad at you too.
I mean, all he saw was he learned about her from a vagina. Yes, she was a creature from hell or whatever, summoned.
Like I mean at this point, my dude, you've been all up in that shit, so you might as well just keep going. Like at that point, like what I mean, he ran away and never talked to her again. I'm like, well, my dude, it's been what, like 6 months? You've been all up in that, so you might
ask
as well
for explanation at this point.
Right?
But
I mean, you got to sit down and have a conversation at this point. I don't understand the whole get up and run away at this point, yo.
99 dudes died because all 99 of those dudes' pullout game was trash.
Right.
Even when they were stabbed by nine tails, they was like, "I'm still not pulling out. I'm dying in the pussy." And they
I'm dying. Damn! Please don't name that episode "I'm dying in the pussy," Chris. Please. Please don't do it.
These just facts.
I don't hear Chris saying that he will not name this episode that.
What? Strong pull game?
Don't name it. Oh, Jesus. I hate
what?
Both of y'all.
Pull a game is strong? I mean, what are we going to do?
I hate both of y'all.
You know, I'm just saying, like, I don't know. Like,
so
I said, I took
Ruby pregnant. Wait, can Christine get Ruby pregnant in that dude's body? How dead alive is he?
I mean, that's the question. Again, no condoms there. So, yeah, can Christine get Ruby pregnant? So there's that. We know Letty's pregnant because they just been fucking with no regard for any kind of condoms or anything.
Not
blood.
Even paying rent.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Like, Letty really did get. She really did get. She really did get pregnant.
She was
by
like,
the stereotypical Negro dude who ain't got no job. Like, even Ruby asked her, like, yo, what is your man doing? He's like the only one around here ain't got no job. But it's constantly busy. I'm just like, hey, you know what? She's right, yo. Tick ain't got no job.
Does he even do housework?
She was like, well, he does help around the house. I'm like, yeah, help give you that dick. That does not count as yard work. That does not count
this
as
is why,
not
this
housework.
Is why I stand with me forever because I love Ruby. I love everything about Ruby. I think Letty is brilliant, and I think that character is just amazingly done. But I don't think that character shows as well without Ruby. Maybe that's just me, but I just don't.
Well, no. So I think one of the things that I like about all jokes aside, that I liked about all three of these episodes is that we're seeing all these women work together to kind of piece together a larger piece of the story. Like, we're getting the larger piece of the story through the eyes of the women, right? Tick is literally just the no job having deadbeat nigga that we bring around with us because we got to, right? The real story is, right, the ain't shit nigga that we bringing around with this ain't shit daddy, they just here because we got to have him here. Or ain't shit not daddy, right? We got everybody else. The story is really coming through everybody else. It's coming through Ruby and what Ruby's done when she goes to Christine and be like, oh, no, now all this stuff. Like, again, let's look at how this happened, right? Ruby finds out that she really fucked William, who's really Christine, and basically goes back to Christine and be like, all right, tell me everything. Like, after she calms down, she basically like, all right, fuck it. Just tell me everything that's going on. Give me. I want you to know everything. Tick, yeah, on the other hand, finds out that he's fucking Tails from fucking Sonic and gets the fuck up and runs away and just never talks to her ever fucking again.
He leaves the continent.
He leaves the fucking continent, right? It's like niggas is built different. It's like somebody literally runs from not again at this point. Tick, you might as well just if she had something, you already got it, my nigga. So yeah, you might as well sit down and have a conversation.
If he had been paying attention, she hadn't told him.
Right. She literally told him the story about it. He just smiled and go like, can I get some more? Right. So it's like, come on. Like, so, right. So the story is really coming from the eyes of women. Right. And so, I kind of figure Letty was pregnant even before, you know, they basically told her flat out. Because as soon as they opened, was it 7? With her having the same dream that Tick had, I was like, oh, she's pregnant. Like, that's what told me, outside of the fact that they've just been fucking her like rabbits with no fucking condoms.
I knew she was pregnant in the bathroom on a sink.
I mean, we go from there. I mean, when it was like, come on, Mike, you right. You see what now? Hmm. Yeah, she got pregnant there. Yeah.
Got pregnant in the bathroom on the sink.
Yeah.
Yes, I knew she got pregnant right then and there. I was like, see, this whole show is about legacy and babies and bloodlines. She pregnant.
Yeah, as soon as she had the same, and they were like, well, huh, how'd you have the same dream I did? I was like, because basically your seed is all up in her, and that's why.
Because Letty is more important to this story than you give her credit for, you dumbass.
Right, and I think that's where I'm going with all the women on the show. Like, all the women are more important than the men, and Atticus is literally there for them. Because everybody else is exploring, right? Everybody else is giving, when we look at it, everybody else is giving us the answers we need. Ruby, in the Christine story, gives us more information on what's happening on that aspect, right? Obviously, with Hippolyta, we get a lot more from just the exploring side of this. And then we get, with Atticus, a lot of the stuff we're really getting when you really look at it, even when the story seems like it's about him, it's really coming through the eyes of Letty. So I'm not saying that he's completely worthless and we're not getting it. I'm joking about that a little bit. But a lot of the exploration of deeper themes and things like that come through her. And
because that's how it always is with a man. I'm sorry. I know people don't like it when they don't see the aggressive, affirmative character development from the male's point of view. But especially in Black families, I don't care. You are almost always going back to a matriarch. So you're not going to get real concrete character and personality development of a male character like Atticus without talking about his relationship to the women in his life, him in position to the women who he comes into contact with in his life, and the world as it functions around him as it relates to the women who live in that world. You're just not. And I know a lot of people, that's their complaint. They feel like, oh, it's too schizophrenic. It shouldn't be anthology style. It should have had one forward driving narrative. I feel like it does.
No, it does. And, yeah, it absolutely does.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people's problem is that the driving narrative is always through the female lens. This is not a story that happens to women. It is not a story that happens to men. It is a story that happens with them, about them, and for them. And it and I'm really enjoying it. I would like to know what Asian American, particularly Koreans think about this episode. I would be very interested. I should probably go look, but I avoided all anything until we recorded. I would be really interested to see how they felt about this episode, how they felt like the story was done, how they felt the folklore, because this is their folklore. And of course, there's also the carryover between what's the overlap between the Chinese people who were coming into the Korea and trying to wipe out all of their heritage and everything. So how much is this a blend, and how much of this, and is this one of those characters that actually exists in multiple pantheons? I would be really interested to know what they think about this. This was written with Kevin Lau, correct?
Might've been.
I think so. So I'm really liking the fact that she's spearheading these episodes and putting them forward, and the people in her writing room who have a better touchstone for certain elements have a voice and are getting heard. But Atticus is trash. He was a nerdy little boy who got the shit beat out of him as much as he got loved by his mama, and he never reconciled, and everything in his world is very black and white, and all he's ever wanted to be is, quote, a man. He went to war and he did everything that was asked of him because he thought that's what men did, up to and including becoming a torturing, murdering douchebag, and you know, getting injured and losing your short-term memory to where you don't remember the girl who you shot, the person sitting next to her, speaks volumes about you. But I think it would be a disservice to say that there isn't any character development directly for Atticus, because the way that he's treating Letty, the way that he's behaving and responding to his family, the way he's even handling this mystery and this and the magic and everything that's happening, it's all rooted in fear. And a lot of it we learned about why in Meet Me and Daegu. Mm-hmm. And I don't think the story holds together as well without seeing who he was, how he got broken over there in his attempt to refute the things his father had said about him, the realization that he had to have when he was there, that he started to become the exact thing that he ran to avoid becoming, and to becoming the man that his father was trying to demand that he become. I thought all of those were very well developed. I thought they were really deep. I thought it was better than he deserved. And, you know, be over here talking about their amazing chemistry. But again, I thought it also showed the phallic nature of what we do with love stories on TV and how we root them in jacked up, traumatic, weird ass, malevolent places. So, yeah. I mean, sorry, I think I ran it a little. My bad.
No, that's fine. That makes sense. Yeah. Like I said, I appreciate the fact that most of 6 is subtitled.
Yes.
You know, not even trying to, like, I think that kind of stuff matters. And also shows you that, hey, more of you guys can do this shit if you needed to. I mean, if it's good enough, we'll watch it and read it and be fine. And then, obviously, episode 7, right? Where we, because the other thing, too, is, like, when you're seeing where all these episodes fall in line. I get that some people are like, they don't like it being, I don't even look at this as anthology. It to me, it still is a straight line. There's a little bit of playing with time, obviously, with where the episodes fall in line with the other. But to me, the through lines are, and you're going on, to me, an anthology might be like, you might tie the first episode to the last one directly with some small hints here and there between the other things to kind of show that we did the mortuary collection, right? Where you kind of have a through line at the end, right? You connect everything at the end. This isn't that. Like, every single episode ties together. the focus might be say something different, but obviously, like again, going to episode five, we're really kind of focused on the fact that, you know, Ruby gets to be a white woman and go around and do all this crazy stuff and the body horror and all this other stuff. But like, we know this is all about Christine setting her up so that she can get what she needs from her later on. Like, there's an obvious through line here. Like, Christine is still trying to, you know, with the was it the sheriff that she believes is trying to take what's rightfully hers and trying to get these pages of the book of names and things like that. Like, we see this. This is a common thread throughout all this stuff. It's all related. So I don't see how people can say that they are thrown off by the, I don't even say it's non-linear, cause to me it's still very linear nature of the show. And then when you get the episode 7 with Ruby, I mean, Ruby with Hippolyta, like, we knew this was coming. We saw her go off to try to find out what was happening to George. We've seen all these pieces. So I don't know. I'm very confused by people who might have a problem with how the story is unfolding. But it's clearly a linear story.
I think they're impatient. I think they're invested in certain parts of the story. I mean, there are parts of this that you're more, or people, or the aspects that you're more invested in than other, aren't they?
I mean, yeah, but it's also, yeah.
And I think for them, they get really hyped up about it, and then the next episode has jumped somewhere else in the storyline, and they don't necessarily like it. I get it. I don't necessarily agree. I felt like I Am was brilliantly done, but I'm also biased in Shannon Houston's favor for how she likes to do episodes and the theme she plays with. But I felt like it pulled together all of the background threads with the smartest person in the room for what's the actual mystery of what's going on. And then to end up having it be about controlling the multiverse. Come on. I don't know how you don't think that brings you to a good through point for your story straight line. So, you know, I agree. But I think that's what it is. I think people have gotten attached. I think a lot of men, especially white men who are watching, really, really identify, and they like Atticus.
Oh, they don't count. I'm sorry. your white man opinions on this show don't count. I'm sorry.
I don't know why you had to say on this show. You could just drop that preposition and just.
I'm trying to be nice. We might have to get the people might actually want to give us more things later on. So I'm just trying to be like. Maybe I run for office one day. I'm just trying to cover my ass a little bit here. Just a little bit.
Fair enough.
Trying to be completely. But I'm saying that as I'm about to say this next line. My favorite line in episode 7. I know people have a lot of different lines that they have a lot of said that she liked. But like, there's that one. It was Hippolyta. Because she said this. Because sometimes I jump between either Hippolyta or Ruby, but when she said, she told Josephine Baker, she was like, sometimes I just want to kill white folks. And I'm just like, I mean, nigga, yeah, it be like that sometimes. I'm like, nigga, who's black? Who doesn't want to just kill some white folks? I'm just like, I mean, yeah, nigga, what? I hit the Alonzo Mourning gift going like, come on. Like,
I hit She's Not Wrong real hard at that moment. I was like, she's not wrong. I mean, we all, yeah. Yeah, I just kind of got stuck with, you know, saying it with my chest, but yeah. But yeah, even before that, just her looking them in the face as they lie to her. Like, when he's tried to stop her and act like his mission for her car was more important than what she was planning to do.
Right.
And he actually expected her to give way. All of it.
I think, I mean, we, again, talk about the Afrofuturism and all the other stuff there. But I think to me, it's the personal moments in the show that really matter to me. So like when she finally has that conversation with George, right? About how, hey, I continually made myself small, right? And I think that's something that obviously black women can definitely, and women in general can relate to. But I think all of us can relate to this idea of making yourself small to, you know, and killing your own dreams. And then when you meet somebody who knows you have these big dreams, but then not necessarily they don't, you know, and I think there's a lot of focus that puts on people that go out there and kill your dreams for you. But just as bad and just as toxic and just as, you know, can be just as damaging as those who who don't actively try to kill your dreams, but watch as you do it yourself and don't try to stop you.
Or it was more convenient for George to know that he could go live and do the things he wanted to do and she'd be safely at home. He didn't have to worry about what was happening at home.
Mm-hmm.
Hippolyta had it. She was clearly smarter than he was.
Right.
And it meant that when he got home, all he had to do was give her the parts of what he needed that he had that were the updates. And he looked brilliant to the people he worked with. I mean, you know, quick turnaround time, right?
Right. And I think that's the other thing, too, is like they've always hinted before that she was really brilliant. But this episode is the one that literally kind of laid out like, oh, no, no, no. Like she damn near genius level on some of this shit. And
yeah.
And I think that was I think it was important to kind of lay that out there and see that. And I think those are the things, again, all the big themes and big things the show deals with, I think, are great. But to me, it's the smaller moments that really make them stick together, right? And to me, that's what did it for me in this episode, of really having her kind of, like I said, you know, choose her name and choose who she wants to be and have confidence in that. And it goes back to, again, what we talk about with Montrose and him not knowing who he wanted to be and not wanting to – and still being afraid of showing that. Like when he – when Sammy cooks on his breakfast and he purposely – starts nitpicking and nagging because he's back to being, you know, uncomfortable and this fear he has with the fact that his neighbor might have seen Sammy and all this stuff. And he purposely goes and picks his fight. And Sammy's just like, nah, I'm not doing this. I'm not going to sit here and go through this again with you because you have problems. I know when to leave. Right. And, and then you start the episode with that. Right. And then by the end of the episode, you're having somebody in Hippolyta who is fully embracing who they are, you know, and going with that. So,
and you have Ruby who's never ever permitted anyone to make her less than who she is. I mean, her sitting on that window sill completely and utterly unbothered was one of the best scenes ever. But that moment with his father also sent Letty to realize that she needed to fix things with Ruby. She couldn't leave them how they were if she didn't want that to be all her relationship would ever be. And I really appreciated that as well. B, you real quiet over there. You don't have no opinions about episode 7?
The guest has a guest. So that's part of the reason that my mic is
moment. Yeah, I kind of figured that. I kind of figured that too, you know.
Does the guest have an opinion on episode 7?
You got anything to say, person? No, she's chilling right now. She doesn't have any sounds she'd like to make. She was just making fun, but now she's cool. I mean, ultimately, I like the fact that they kind of had this whole like black woman power, black womanhood story kind of linked together in this juxtaposition of you kind of settling into your roles and allowing yourself to kind of be like how black women, despite being the actual, you know, the head of the household, the power of the family, the strength, they end up becoming like just domesticated. This and it's not always negatively done, I guess. So it's not always malicious, right? It's just kind of a part of women just kind of accepting their roles in different and it's throughout history. It's not in just this time period. It's something that women have been dealing with since the beginning of fucking time. And to see it in this episode, you know, a time episode, and how to have this black woman like traversing and showing all of the different things that she's kind of named herself to be. She's like, no, instead of people labeling me, I am now labeling myself and telling the world who I am. And I like the way that they kind of traversed each one of those periods. I like the whole, sometimes I just, like y'all are saying, sometimes I just want to kill white people. And then literally she jumps to a time period where that is who she is now. That is her name, White Slayer. And she does that. And then, you know, ultimately we end up at the whole Discoverer, which it's funny that she's the Discoverer and her husband was the one creating the guides, right? Like she should have been with him the whole time, but he felt safer with her at home given the time period. I completely understand why he wanted her safe, but ultimately this turns into some Why the Caged Sings type shit. She really was just stripped of all of the adventure that life has to offer her, especially given her ability, her intelligence, and her passions. Just like, I thought the Josephine Baker scene was amazing. Like, yeah, as far as like just the way it's shot, the choreography, the actress that played Josephine, the way that the Hippolyta kind of just rolls in and like she starts off terribly, right? But when she finds her, when she comes into her own, you really get to see how dope of a person she is. And she kind of becomes the life of the party after being seen as the klutz and being told by the other French women, oh, you Americans, you need to go back home. She ends up becoming the cool cat on the block next to Josephine fucking Baker.
What did you catch that the person who did the toast on the stairs was Frida Kahlo?
No, I did not, because I don't know who that is.
What? I'm sorry, what?
I don't. I'm not going to sit here and lie to your face.
Okay. Well, you like art, and she's an amazing artist, so you should go make friends and figure out who Frida Kahlo is. I think you would appreciate it. But no, I agree with you. I think my favorite line out of all of this was she was like, you know, I came here and I realized that I had just become the type of black woman that white people always wanted me to be. And they just found a way to lynch me without me feeling the noose around my neck. And that's kind of where I sat for this whole episode, if I'm being honest. And just like,
when she said that line, I know she was talking about white people, but I felt like she was talking about everyone above black women socially, just in general, right?
All of it. She's talking about all of it.
Yeah, I was waiting for the direct connection between that scene and the bedroom scene with her husband, because I was like, you know, he like it plays a big part in the reason of why you was kind of stagnant through life, right? And I'm glad that she expressed that to him. And whether it was Earth to him or Earth one him, whichever, like, I appreciated the fact that he was able to sit and listen. And he really, like, the imagery kind of came full form for him as he started to think about it. Because this is a man who ponders well. Like, he reads, so his comprehension skills are top notch. It didn't take him long to realize, oh, shit. And his oh shit realization, I hope, is something that a lot of the men watching this show, I hope they take something from that.
Oh, you know they're not, though.
I know they're not.
I mean, come like, on. I mean, I hear you, but you know they're not. You're right. You're right. But they should, but they're not.
No one, they're not going to take anything from this. But I like the fact that, I mean, I appreciated all of this because I don't necessarily think it's just about white people either. It's like I was listening to the After Show podcast and one of the women on there said, sometimes shrinking yourself is about surviving at all. And I think that's something that can speak to a lot of people. It's like a lot, like my parents worked very, very hard to make sure that we would be able to live outside of being in their home. Now, I know also that part has to do with the fact my mom was like, yeah, I got to get out of my house. But the other part of it is she's like, you have to learn how to navigate the world that you have to live in, all of it. And sometimes that means things that you think you want, you can't have. So you need to let those things go. So sometimes people convince you that the parts of you that you think are amazing are the wrong parts of you to be trying to showcase as important to the world. And the fact that, like, there was the one scene where she's telling her daughter about the stars and why she knows about them, she still was whispering about the fact she won a competition and named a star that they are now laying under and listening, looking at in this, I can't remember what those things are called now, because words are escaping me.
The observatory?
Thank you, the observatory. And then so then you fast forward to the scene where her daughter had to envision her as the space explorer. And it was because of how her mother raised her and the things she was teaching her, but she had forgotten that those things were hers. And she was smart enough to figure out how to break out of the white room. You know, but it never dawned on her when this woman was saying, you're not a prisoner unless you want to be. So I liked the way that they put all these things together. I also liked the juxtaposition between her, the purity of her knowledge and her journey towards this place versus all of the malicious and insidiousness of the people who were trying to use this and wrestle it for their control. And the differences of their experiences, because clearly wherever Tick went didn't end up being quite the place where he was welcomed and given the opportunity to, you know, gain the ability to evolve into being able to be all things in the multiverse and go wherever. And I like the fact that she wasn't running back home in fear. She ran back home because she now recognized her daughter still needed her, that it wasn't time for her to leave. And now she knew there was plenty of time for her to eventually explore all the things that she wanted to explore, that she came to the realization that the only limits that she truly has to acknowledge are her own. And I don't know many people at all who showcase stories that have to do with women and let that be the conclusion. So they talked about motherhood, parenthood, all of those things, but they did it without ever diminishing her as an individual. And I thought that was probably one of the most impressive things about this, you know, that and the fact she slit a dude's throat and walked around him like he wasn't shit on an African plane. That was, you know, that was also a high point for me. Just saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No. Anything else we want to talk about with this?
Did you guys look at the sneak preview for episode 8?
I did not.
Well, the cliffhanger for this one I noticed was the comic book that Tick didn't get from under that cop that Tick he should have worthless. Thrown through the hole.
Tick mm-hmm. is worthless.
Well, nigga, okay. So we agree on this, right? Like, this man's dead body is sitting there. He's dying. Help this man up and throw him through the portal. Like, what the fuck?
With the gun?
What the fuck, dog? Like, I'm looking at the scene. I'm like, so Tick's going to pick this guy up and throw him through the portal, right? Like, he's already did it once. He just needs to do it again, right? No. No, right. Half-ass Tick.
Like, yeah. I was like, how is he not? I'm just glad to know I'm not the only one who sat here. Is like, he's really not going to throw that dead body. He's not going to pick that body up. He's just going to stare at it next to Hippolyta.
Yeah, I wasn't green or nothing, but I was immensely disappointed in his stupidity.
Well,
his stupidity.
I mean, he is dumb.
But like, bruh.
I was like, hey, throw the body through the hole.
Bruh.
Throw the gun through the hole.
That would require Tick to be able to think on his feet. And when has Tick shown us that ability to do that?
Once.
When?
When they had to leap across that bitch, across the pendulums. That's about it.
Is that really thinking across her feet? I don't know. Yes. I mean, okay, we give it to him for that one, yes. I guess. We'll give him that one, but it's kind of a stretch. Kind of a stretch.
The first time we seen a nigga actually run from the pussy on TV.
Thinking on his feet, was snatching up his clothes and getting the hell out. That's all you got? That's all you gonna give him?
Running away from the snatch, trying not to get snatched.
I mean, I'm just saying, at that point, you might as well say, you already contracted whatever you were going to get. You might as well.
He is already deep in the pain. How much you want to, are we taking bets on whether or not he left her pregnant? Can she get pregnant? Can I tell
I originally thought that myself, too. So does he have two pregnancies on the way? So
he got kids everywhere. He clearly has hoes in different area codes. That's where we are right now. I say, I don't care. And I'm just curious. I sit in a state of curiosity with respect to Tick. I am deeply appreciative of everything that they are doing in the show. And my new catchphrase is the one, again, from Shannon Houston. And I want it on a t-shirt. All your faves are trash. All of them. All of them got problems. But it's what I'm really enjoying about Lovecraft Country. Except for the fact I wish that somebody would slap some condoms on Tick's body. Condoms, y'all. Condoms.
So, there you guys have it. We will be back for the finale. Three more episodes. Also, at some point, we'll have the columnists up, bro. I'm just going to keep throwing you under the bus.
See, you're just going to shame me on every episode.
Every episode, we're going to shame you. I'm okay. Shaming you until we get on every episode. We do already have up Nomadland and Piece of a Woman, and I think there's two more we're scheduled to do on a non-premium feed. So I think Violation and I don't know if we want
y'all
to.
Y'all ain't ready for Violation.
Yeah, we're not
y'all
ready for
ready
Violation.
And but I'm ready to talk
about
it.
Concrete Cowboy. So we'll have that coming out, and then we're gonna do Get the Hell Out as a premium episode. So stay tuned for that. And all those are TIFF, still TIFF reviews we're doing. So we have so many movies to talk about. So
we got thanks for you.
Yes. All right, folks. Thank you guys very much for listening. We'll be back soon. Until next time, we're out of here. Peace.